Discerning Hearts presents Heart of the World, Meditations on the Paschal Mystery with Dr. Anthony Lillis. In response to the isolation in which much of the world was plunged into due to the outcomes of the global pandemic caused by the coronavirus in 2020, Dr. Anthony Lillis has chosen to offer Discerning Hearts listeners an opportunity to enter into a special retreat, which he was to offer in April of 2020 at a retreat center in California. In this special presentation, consisting of several successive conferences by Dr. Lillis, he will base his meditations on the Paschal Mystery by exploring the great spiritual classic, Heart of the World, by Hans Urs von Balthasar. We now present Conference 2, Part 2 of this retreat with Dr. Anthony Lillis. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Do not take offense, you branches, at the deformity of your trunk. Do not scorn the powerlessness that strengthens you. For in me, death is at work, but in you, life. You are sated. You have already become rich. Without me, you have attained to lordship. Were it only true lordship, then could I reign in you. But while you are strong, I am still weak. And at the same time, as you make a show of your honors, I am despised. To this very hour I suffer hunger and thirst, nakedness and blows. I am the homeless one who slaves away at the work of his hands. I am the accused, one who blesses, the persecuted, who bears it patiently, the slandered consoler, the world's refuse. Still today, as always, I am the draining dishwater in which you all wash. And just as you despise me, so you despise my disciples and emissaries, for in them also the same law of weakness is at work. And because all life has its origin in impotence, and even in disgrace, I have appointed the last place for them, as if they were evildoers condemned to death. But just as I live from the power of God after being crucified in weakness, so too will they prove themselves to you to be alive in me with the power of God. For look, in them my life has begun to circulate and to bring them to ripeness as my first fruits. Just as a strawberry plant sends out long shoots which soon form roots and finally produce a new plant, so too I have multiplied my inner center and established new centers in hearts sprung from mine. My children become fathers, and new communities blossom from the blood of my apostle's heart. For my grace is always fruitful, and my gift it is for you to pass my grace on. My treasure is to be found in prodigality, and only he possesses me who gives me away. For I am indeed the Word, and how can one possess a word other than by speaking it?
Beautiful. Thank you for that. This is a very rich reading. In the very beginning, we have that image of the vine and the branches and the trunk of the vine. It looks kind of deformed and twisted and so forth. And the branches look like they're new and filled with life. And von Balthasar kind of does something a little bit interesting. And Jesus, when he teaches it, he talks the two images, powerful images he gives is, apart from me, you can do nothing. And so we need to stay grafted on the vine, connected to him. And in this reflection, though, the stump and the vine seem to have not a lot to do with the vine. Is life himself, and he's undergoing death, and we seem to be the ones who are fully alive, but until we've repented of our sins, we're really subject to death, you know. And so what does it mean to be grafted onto the vine? It means to die to ourselves. And so this leads to the second great image that Jesus gives us in that reading, and that is the Father is the vine dresser. And he prunes the vine so that it will bear much fruit. This image means a lot to me because I grew up, my grandfather had a vineyard. My uncle still farms it. And one of my favorite times of year, besides harvest, was pruning the vines. And because the other workers and so forth, while we were working, they would sing. And it was kind of fun to hear the songs and try to keep up with them. They worked pretty fast. And then after we pruned the vines, we would pick up the old vine stumps and things. And so this image has a lot to me. But why did we? I remember asking my grandfather why we pruned the vines the way we did. We only allowed just a couple branches to remain. And he said, if you didn't do that, the vine, its energy, it won't be as fruitful next year because you have too many shoots on it. So some of the vines need to be clipped off so that the vine will produce more grapes. And so that's the image that we get in the scriptures, and people in vineyards today know this is, you know, the same truth. But in our lives, something needs to be clipped off and die. And behind this whole reading, as you were reflecting, the thought of that is what came back to us. We have a certain amount of hubris and a certain amount of arrogance towards God. And we have maybe the initial grace of conversion, and we are maybe on a little bit of a spiritual high, or we're at a high about how successful our careers or our families are. And we can let that get us carried away. How do we stay rooted to the vine? How do we stay grounded, grafted onto the vine, connected to the vine, to Jesus, who is working in our death, who seems to choose the least? And not only does he choose the least, but the people who follow him, they seem to go into the least too. And that was also a part of this theme. And isn't part of the reason why we would rather exalt ourselves and our accomplishments and get caught up in kind of this and say, is because when we look at Jesus, we have a hostility. We don't want to die. You know, it's a scary thing to be in the last place. And yet that is where Jesus continually, perpetually works. Right now in the pandemic, my heart goes to the homeless some of whom are like the homeless in this reading. They're homeless people who do work and who this thing is just causing them all kinds of disaster. Some of them are suffering with drug and alcohol addiction and mental illness and other things that just don't allow them to connect with society, and so they're a very vulnerable population. Well, what's being said to us in this reading is that that's exactly where Jesus is. My heart is always amazed and moved by the missionaries of charity, who even in this pandemic, they're still ministering to those to whom nobody else will minister. They boldly go where nobody else will go. Mm-hmm. And they have learned this lesson that's in this reading. They've learned to dwell where the word is and not to worry about what others think or the inconveniences or what's uncomfortable. Instead, all they worry about is Jesus, and they want to be with him as he as he works out his dying in the world. You know, as he works out his dying, as the mystery of his cross plays itself out in the world, this is the source of new life. It's hidden. It's not apparent. No one praises you for it. You're overlooked. But for them, Jesus and the new life he gives us through his death is so precious, they never want to be separated from it. So that was kind of my thoughts on this particular reading. And what I'm hoping those who are on retreat will be able to do is go to that reading today at some point and look at that reading of Jesus the vine, the vine, and we are the branches, and think about what we've heard you read. What in me needs to die so that the Father can be more fruitful? Or what has died? And am I able to let that go? Or am I resentful towards God because it hurts so much? Or have I let myself be discouraged because something that I thought was so important, God has suddenly taken away from me? What if that thing, whatever it was, needed to die so that the Father in his love could be more fruitful in you? And so think about what that thing is. Make the effort in your heart to surrender it to the Father and his love through Jesus. And then watch what the Father does. Watch the fruitfulness he'll produce in you. Did you have anything that popped in your mind when you read this passage, Chris?
Well, a lot of things were popping in my mind and in my heart. One of the things that I might offer to you, Anthony, maybe there's a soul out there who feels that they have suffered a death, that there is something in their life that has been destroyed, you know, that they are in that place, and yet there is so much pain, it just brings on tears. Okay, I'm a vine, but you had me growing in this area. Now I am reduced to this, and how can I possibly be fruitful? Maybe I'm alone in my house, in my apartment, wherever I'm at, and I am too frightened of the world to be able at this point, because what I thought was how I was supposed to go, my decisions were all wrong. You know, my discernment was all wrong, apparently. And the next movement is a frightening one. How do I step? Because I can't make a decision. I was wrong. I thought God wanted this, and this happened. Does that make sense? I mean,
sure. I would say if somebody's kind of dealing with that right now, the first thing is to give yourself just a little bit of time. This is where mental prayer is so vital. You know, something like this happens, and you need to pause over it, and you need to ask the deeper questions. You know, why was God not allowing this to be fruitful? Why did it all explode in my face? And if you will pause and surrender the situation over to him, Jesus wants you to be fruitful, but he can only let you be fruitful to the extent that you are joined to him in his death. And so you're being invited to make a great act of faith. But making this great act of faith, you can't generate it. You can't like, listen, okay, I heard the retreat conference and I'm going to, you know, make this heroic act of faith and get back in there and fight. You know, you can't do it like that. It doesn't work. It takes time. But the soul that will surrender itself to the Holy Spirit And patiently, as it goes through the hurt, God teaches it such powerful, powerful things. It gives it treasures that it could never receive otherwise. And that's part of the reason then for the silence. The silence in prayer is the place where you let God bestow on you the blessings he wants to give you. If he's taken something away, there's something even more beautiful he wants to give you. And like a confident child, confident in its father's love, open your hands and be ready to receive it. And he may take his time giving it to you. Well, let him take his time giving it to you. Whatever time it takes will be time well spent. And then after you receive the consolation from the Father, you'll be able to console those he sends you to with the same consolation that you've received.
Anthony, also, I think this, you know, that you mention it, pruning in this particular description by Christ, how he offers this, I am the vine, you are the branches. And the whole aspect of pruning, it hurts. You know, it's not like getting your hair cut. I mean, yeah. If we've been pruned of something, it's a severing. You know, I thought this was supposed to grow that way. Or I was happy. Things were moving out. I thought I had this beautiful, you know, I was growing in all these different directions. And boom, boom, boom. And I think that's where some of us might struggle with the idea of being pruned by God. Because the hurt is so strong that for some, that the pain of that, first you struggle with it, and you cry and you're angry and you're all these other things. And when you realize that God is involved in all these things somehow in the great mystery of whatever may have happened, even in the unjust things, he's present with us in those moments. We're afraid to cry out to God and say, why? If you were, where were you? Why did you let this happen? Because I think there might still be a block, like somehow for a Jesus that will suffer death and be crucified, how can I yell? How can I cry out and say, I'm not happy? As this is what, you know, the Teresa of Avila thing, this is what you do to your friends. You know, we don't. And so we kind of hide from even that, don't we?
Yeah. Well, I think it's true. Although part of the reason to go into silence is it helps you find your courage to say what you need to say to God. And he wants to hear your concerns. Yes, he already knows what's there. He already knows you're unhappy. But he really wants to hear from you. Because he treasures you, and he knows that this thing has hurt you, and if there was any other way, he would have found it, but he couldn't find it, and so this was the way, and so he's asking for your trust, and that trust includes sharing with him where you're actually at. That's what I mean by going into the silence. Going into the silence is pouring out your heart until you have nothing more to say. And then waiting. Waiting for him to answer you. And sometimes scripture or a good spiritual book can help you while you're waiting. Sometimes the rosary or the Jesus prayer. There's no strict rules on how you might wait on him. But pouring out your soul is something that is beautiful and appropriate to do. But pour it out to your loving Father. And while you're pouring it out, even though it doesn't seem like he loves you, and even though it just seems like he's so rough and that what he's demanding is too much, trust him anyway. Trust him anyway. And if you do, that there is a consolation that comes, And the consolation that you receive when you receive it is worth so much more than what you've lost, and even the sobering pain. But I've seen souls just almost in shock after something they've encountered in their lives. And learning to trust God, learning to be with, to enter into the silence, learning to pour out their heart. This is part of their great act of faith. And when as they do that, a greater joy is given them every single time. And the more wonderful work that God is able to accomplish in them is able to happen. I'm thinking right now about a great mystic I met in Rome when I was a student. I left to go to Rome. There were a lot of things in my life that were kind of up in the air, and I was struggling with my faith and so forth. But I went to Rome as an act of faith, and I kind of assumed, because I was making an act of faith, that when I got to Rome, everything was going to work out. I had made arrangements for a place to stay. I had saved up so much money to be able to go to school and pay rent and all of these things I kind of planned and prepared for, and I was excited. Well, I get to Rome, and I go to the house where I'm supposed to stay, and the priest opens the door, and he goes, you know, "Oh my goodness, you came." And oh no! And he said, "I didn't think you'd actually come, because a lot of people say they're going to come and they don't come, and so I didn't realize you were serious, and so I rented your room out, and but let me take you down to a pensione where they can put you up for a couple weeks until you find a place." And so I did that. We walked through cobblestone streets. He was helping me carry my bags. I'd packed everything for, you know, several years of staying in Rome. And I get to this other house, and it's the Ukrainian patriarch, exiled, is living there with these Ukrainian nuns from Brazil. And all these kind of exotic pilgrims in this kind of pensione, it's just off this little plaza called, in English, it's called the Plaza of the Gypsies, and there were gypsies just outside this thing, so it was totally Rome. And anyway, I was there, and kind of I realized I didn't have enough money. I didn't have a place to live, and a host of other things that I'd hoped were going to go one way were totally going the other. I was hoping for a scholarship, and I got word that the scholarship that I thought I was going to get, I wasn't going to get, and all these things just totally went wrong. And in fact, I'd eventually wind up homeless for a little while, but that's another story. But at this stage of the game, though, I was at a critical thing because I was tempted to pack up my bags and go home. But a priest said, I think God has sent you here, and I want you to meet this great mystic. And this woman was the prioress of these Russian Byzantine Carmelites in Rome somewhere. I've never been there since. I owe this woman so much. And after evening prayer, she sat me down and she said, "I can see that you're thinking about going back home. And I have a word from the Lord for you. And the word of the Lord is, no one is sent by God to Rome except for a very grave purpose. So you must not be discouraged, but you must stay and persevere with the work that God has given you to do." And then she told me her story. And in her story, she had been a contemplative in Canada, and her community went some directions that just unsettled her, and she didn't know what to do. And she had this nice, beautiful contemplative life, and that was completely taken away from her. And Then she was invited to live in Rome, and she lived in a tower in Rome for some time. Unknown, begging on everybody's good graces. She had been invited by a cardinal, and cardinals began slowly to go to her for spiritual direction, which eventually led to her becoming prioress. But in the beginning, when she was first in Rome, she thought it was a mistake. She thought her whole life was a mistake when she entered the contemplative community to begin with, when she went to Rome. Everything seemed to be totally falling apart. And this was the church in the 1970s. It looked like the church was falling apart too. So why am I here in Rome? What am I doing? And have I made a total mistake? And she shared with me that in prayer, she had also heard the voice of God calling her to stay with him here. And that's when the cardinals, more of them, began to come to her in secret spiritual counsel. And eventually one of them gave her the responsibility of this Carmelite, Russian Byzantine Carmelite monastery. And when I heard her words to me, it gave me courage again, that even though the branches that of my life that were in California and with my friends and with my family, the way of life that I had wanted so much had all been cut away, God was going to make me fruitful in a way that I could not ask or imagine if I trusted him and persevered in the task that he gave me. And that would be my answer to people who find themselves in the similar place. Something's been taken away from you, and you're in this place right now, and it seems that you have a decision either to kind of run away from it and try to grasp for something from the past, or in fear to never try something to serve the Lord again because everything failed so miserably. And fearfulness and brashness and nostalgia, these are not the way forward. The way forward is to learn to love right here and right now. And the first moment of that love is to trust, is to love God, to trust in his goodness, to trust in his goodness enough that you pour out your heart to him. So that was part of the story of my journey to Rome.
In concluding this particular portion of our conference, Anthony, you know, as you were just saying that, I think it's important for people to remember, as you said, you're not going to get your answers right away. It takes time, sometimes to understand what it is that God is doing. And to be able to give yourself that, particularly now during this incredible period of grace that you've just now entered into by not only the Holy Week that we're experiencing, the Triduum of 2020, but no matter where you enter into this, this is something that, what would you have the soul, how would you have them approach this moment?
Well, I've talked about the importance of having a place and time of prayer in your household during this time, and I strongly, strongly recommend letting your life be built around prayer. So looking at your daily life right now, and instead of building it around the meal times or the television times or whatever else, build your life around prayer and put that first. If you don't pray the rosary, maybe start praying the rosary or the Jesus prayer. If you've never tried praying the liturgy of the hours, it might be time to take that up. But whatever time you spend in prayer, however you order your life so that you have space during your day for you and God, probably the most important part, whatever form of prayer you use, is to by faith believe that he's personally present to you and that he's at work in your life and in your family and in the world, and believe it as a matter of a faith confidently with banish doubts as they come up. Just surrender the doubts to the Lord and choose to believe that this God who is love is at work in your heart and at work in your world. And he's at work in the places where we need to die to ourselves and where we've suffered death, but he is at work and he's accomplishing something beautiful. And whatever the rest of your prayer, wherever it takes you, start with that act of faith in him. And if you'll do that, I think some of the beautiful treasures that he wants to give you, precisely in places where you've suffered death or that you're having to let go of, I think you'll begin to see his providence in a wonderful way.
It's beautiful. Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, Chris. God bless.
This concludes Conference 2, Part 2 of this special audio version of an online retreat entitled Heart of the World, Meditation on the Paschal Mystery with Dr. Anthony Lillis. This retreat is based on the book Heart of the World by Hans Urs von Balthasar. To obtain a copy of this book, please visit the website of its publisher, Ignatius Press, at ignatius.com. To hear and or to download this audio podcast, visit discerninghearts.com. You can find it on numerous podcast streaming platforms, as well as on the free Discerning Hearts app. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission. And if you feel us worthy, consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com. And we hope that you will join us again for Heart of the World, Meditation on the Paschal Mystery with Dr. Anthony Lillis.